Well, I don't know. Everyone has a podcast now.
Well, not really. What is true is that, according to Nielsen statistics, 55% of the U.S. population, that's over 155 million people, have listened to a podcast, and 24% of the population, that's 68 million people, listen to podcasts weekly. And these numbers continue to trend upward.
What's also true is that over 75% of all podcasts fade away after the first few episodes. It could be for a variety of reasons: lack of strong concept, poor production value, people not realizing how much time needs to be dedicated to it, or simply just not knowing how to get the word out about podcasts. That's where WeKnowPodcasting.com comes in.
At WeKnowPodcasting.com, we have a combined 25 years of podcast experience, and we can help you achieve your podcasting goals. Whether you need help starting a new podcast or want to take your currently active podcast to the next level, we got you. From consultations to concept development, from theme music to editing, promotion, animation, graphics, you name it, and we're here to help.
Don't become another failed podcast statistic. Let us guide you and help your show become a success. Check out the website at WeKnowPodcasting.com, and even if you're on the fence, don't hesitate to reach out. We're friendly guys, we're passionate about pods, and we're here to help.
The song Popular is an unforgettable, grungy, spoken word piece that doesn't necessarily fit into the rest of the Not a Surf catalog. This week, we're joined by Chris183 of the High School Never Ends podcast, and together, we try to avoid a flowery, emotional speech about what we think about this band, and we hope that everyone will appreciate the straightforward manner in which we decide whether this 1996 hit is thunder or a blunder.
Don't make a big production. Don't make up an elaborate story. This will help you avoid a big tear-jerking scene. If you want to date other people, say so. Be prepared for the boy to feel hurt and rejected. Even if you've gone together for only a short time and haven't been too serious, there's still a feeling of rejection when someone says she prefers the company of others to your exclusive company.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed. And you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, so the mid to late 90s were a very big time for songs with spoken word verses. We're talking, it was the time of the Butthole Surfers. It was the time of Not a Surf. And that's what we're here to talk about today, Chris. We're talking about Not a Surf. And so you chose this song. Why'd you choose this song?
Yeah, man. Ever since I saw this song for the first time back in 96 when I was in high school and a teenager, it just, I couldn't stop watching this. Like this video. So it was the video, obviously, that sucked me in. But it was just so different than everything else that I saw that was out there.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, definitely is different than any other Not a Surf song. And it's kind of their worst song, honestly, like because it's almost not a song. It's kind of like it's like slam poetry in a way with the chorus.
I spoke about this on the Butthole Surfers episode that I've covered Pepper. That same show I also covered Popular. And in doing research, what I found out about the song that made me like it a lot more is, do you know where the verses come from?
Chris knows.
I do, yeah. Well, I couldn't tell you specifically, but I think that I heard at one point in time in an interview that he actually took it out of a 1950s book that basically was advice for teens on certain things. Is that correct?
Yeah, so he literally found this book from the 50s, and I'm going to pull up the title of the book. It's from Penny's Guide to Teenage Charm and Popularity. And he just was like, this advice is so awful that I'm going to sarcastically read it. And I've given credit to this song. I have no evidence of this, but I'm confident that the first three albums by the band Me Without You were insanely inspired by just this song by Not a Surf.
Okay, yeah. They're very spoken wordy, but that's pretty cool. And it kind of makes sense the way things are worded here now when I look at these lyrics. Do you guys agree with these lyrics? I've been looking at them like, does this make sense?
Like keeping your hair spotless and clean and only washing it once every 2 weeks?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah. I was really confused when I first heard that back in the day. So I don't think that works, right?
No, I do it every 2 days. I wash my hair. That's about it.
Can you be popular if you
wash your hair once every 2 weeks?
I don't think so. I think that would be the end of the system popularity.
I mean, so if this is from a book from the 50s, maybe you didn't wash your hair as often. I don't know if you wash your hair too much, then it can get very dry.
Yeah, and maybe you also have to imagine that this was probably not a book for all teens, but very much specifically for a teenage girl.
Right, okay.
Because they're referring to like Johnny Football Hero and mm-hmm. like stuff like that. Like, that's what I think is really fun. I've never known that piece of information until this weekend. But I'm like, that is almost funnier that it is verbatim this book.
Right. You know what else just blew my mind from what you just said? So you just said the name of where they got this from was Penny's
Guide to Teenage Charm and Popularity.
At the beginning of the song, do you hear the cheerleader say, "Oh, I don't care, I got pennies"?
Yeah.
Isn't that what she's talking about? Says,
yeah, she's referring to the book in the opening conversation.
Oh, I never knew that. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's definitely got that Weezer the Sweater song sort of vibe to it. I mean, it's...
I did you a favor when I wrote down the lyrics, because the first thing I found had their interpretation of what they thought the girls were saying over top of that music, and there was a lot of question marks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, let's get to the song.
You skipped straight to the hair thing, but the first verse, we'll call it, the first spoken word, is basically about how to break up with somebody.
Yeah.
And they're just saying, like, rip off the Band-Aid, basically, right?
Which I actually... It's funny, that part... I actually do think it's not terrible dating advice. Like,
no, and I'll tell you what, maybe you guys can answer this question, but in the video, so when they start this, they're in a class and the lead singer obviously is playing the professor, but what class is this where you go in and you get yelled at because he's actually yelling at them about these things to their faces.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So I don't know what the tests would be or the subject matter or the syllabus that he put together for them at the beginning of the year, but just really curious about that.
Just getting his point across, man. This was an animated teacher, I guess. But yeah, it is crazy how it gets really intense with this very pretty straightforward advice for teens, I think.
I really do. The first verse might actually be my favorite of all of them because there are like... There's a whole portion here that I think about. Know how you talk about like there's those certain songs that you're just like cutting the grass, but in your head you're just like humming that song? For some reason, I constantly think of it starts at, even if you've only gone together for a short time and haven't been too serious, there's still a feeling of rejection when someone says that they prefer the company of others to your exclusive company. But if you're honest and direct and avoid making a flowery emotional speech when you break the news, the boy will respect you for your frankness. And honestly, he'll appreciate the kind of straightforward manner in which you told him the decision. Unless he's a real jerk or a crybaby, you'll remain friends.
Yeah, I love that Chris could mouth along with you the entire verse.
It's so good. It's such a good opening speech to set up what this song is.
Yes.
That's probably part of the appeal and fun of a song like this is, just as Chris was doing, to know the words.
Yeah.
To be able to talk along to this is part of the fun, just like I've brought up about, like, it's the end of the world as we know it. Or just any of those songs with a lot of lyrics, if you know them, if you took the time to like learn them and know them, makes you like the song an extra amount.
When I covered it, I was really afraid I wasn't going to remember the words. So I came up with this genius idea, which was that I printed the lyrics and bought a 17 magazine and stapled the lyrics inside the 17 magazine so I could look like I was reading out of the magazine. Turns out, after listening to this song enough times, out of fear that I would forget the words, didn't need the 17 magazine. I had this thing locked and loaded in my brain.
Yeah. It's very much all the high school cliches.
Yeah.
The football star and the popular girl and everything like that. Definitely appealed to teens in the 90s. It's definitely got that alternative feel and weirdness to it that, honestly, if you're not a surf fan and you're listening, it doesn't really match with the rest of their music.
No.
They write a lot of really beautiful songs. And like,
I mean, they became one of those bands that, like, I think I wrote down the list of all the TV shows that they had their songs in, but like, it's all like One Tree Hill, Gilmore Girls, like How I Met Your Mother. Like, they found a niche for like a CW story type show.
Sure.
Their music fit perfectly. Like, it's just that it's like Dawson's Creek music.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I get, you know what? Not that that's a bad thing. Like, of course you would probably love to have your songs in those shows, but I think they're a little more than that.
Like the OC. They're an OC soundtrack.
No, that's not what I'm getting at. I'm getting at there's a little more depth to this. Because,
oh, no. I'm not even saying that, like, they're just, but like those types of shows had a very specific sound that they were going for, and it was the indie rock sound. And this is not indie rock. Like, this doesn't sound like, this sounds like grunge. And even the rest of this album doesn't sound that grungy compared to this song. And then, like, yeah, the rest of their career was absolutely, they are a indie rock band that does interesting things with pretty melodies.
Right. And I think, especially the 90s, but I think this applies to today too. Songs, a lot of times, that become hits have something very strange about them. Yes. There's something memorable and strange, and this is someone shouting at you. Basically someone shouting at you rules for success as a teen. And I think that's memorable and relatable, and yeah, it sticks out like a sore thumb in a world of middle of the road songs.
Do you think that this song would have even been a hit without the video? Because I feel like without the video, this song makes even less sense to just like hear randomly on the radio.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't think it would have been, because I think, first of all, it caught the eye when you saw the, because when they would play the video clips on MTV, what they would show you is the hook or the chorus, and that was a very sing-songy, catchy tune. I think that caught people's
them
attention.
On the football field. I remember that clip
of the cheerleader.
It would just cut to like Nata Surf playing on the football field in their bright colors, and then you watch the actual video and it's like a much darker, like grainy video inside the classroom.
But I think that that brought people in to actually see what this was all about. And once you did, it hooked you, because again, it was a little bit different. And I have another point too, is the time period when this came out. See, to me, they sounded a lot like just that song, specifically his voice, maybe. And I don't know what it was, but like Weezer at the time. And I was a huge Weezer fan. I love the Blue Album and the Sweater song. And for me, it was kind of like the almost that same sound twinge.
Yeah.
And it just pulled me in. So that's why I went out and bought the CD, because of that.
I used to categorize, this is a genre, subgenre that doesn't actually exist. But I used to have a subgenre in my mind that I called geek rock, that was like, like I put like Weezer in there. I put Weedus in there. Like those bands that very much, you're like, these are guys who played D&D in the basement, but also like good music and like formed a band and aren't afraid to like sing about those types of topics. And for a very brief time, I was like, Nata Surf, yeah, they're definitely like a geek rock band. They're not. This is like the one song that feels like it could have been. But I agree with you. I got, the first time I heard this, I got a Weezer-y vibe from it, because it just felt like pissed off nerdy kid bitching about the popular kids at school.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's outlandish to compare Nata Surf to Weezer. I think Nata Surf's a little less, other than the song, wacky than Weezer. Weezer can get a little zany, I guess, and this band, other than the song, once again, is pretty straightforward with some, you know, darker sounding songs and things like that. I don't think you're not going to hear like a If You Want Me To from Nata Surf, really, or something like that. But geek rock isn't something that, or whatever, nerd rock, I feel like that's very much a thing, man. I think that that kind of started with Elvis Costello.
Yeah, and I would put like Violent Femmes in there. Like just those bands that really kind of owned the geeky, dorky image.
Kind of even feel like there's some bands within the punk rock scene. Like I might put Motion City Soundtrack in there.
I could see that. I mean, honestly, the Descendants, I would say, was kind of a geek rock band in the sense of like Milo was very open, like, I like science.
Right. Sure.
Like, sure. I'm going to go to school for science.
I think this song for sure fits in there. Yeah, 96. When I look at what was happening, wow. I didn't really realize this, but this is kind of like a borderline, like, is this a hit?
Yeah, a little bit. That's why I asked about the music video, because I don't think it would have charted on anything if not for the music video.
Yeah, because the song only peaked at number 51 on July 27th, 1996. At the time, Alanis Morissette, You Learn, was the number one song in the country when this song was out. Also, at that time, Give Me One Reason by Tracy Chapman, Because You Loved Me by Celine Dion, and Killing Me Softly by the Fugees were in the charts at that time.
But it did a little bit better on the alternative charts. It got to 11 on the alternative charts. And when it got on number 11 on the alternative charts in August. At that time, the number one song was Primitive Radio Gods, as it had just unseated Butthole Surfers.
Yeah.
And then you also had like Spider Webs by No Doubt, Tonight Tonight by The Smashing Pumpkins, and Where It's At by Back on the Radio all at the same time.
Primitive Radio Gods song, isn't that another spoken word song?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This was the peak of spoken word music on the radio. What, man, all they needed to do is throw the Streets on there too. It could have just been,
they were right around the corner. They had maybe what, 5 more years, and true. Then Mike Skinner was all on the radio.
Yeah,
I loved it.
What else, what other spoken word songs?
So this was also the following year, what I think is like the ultimate of spoken word hits is the Sunscreen song by Baz Luhrmann came out. Are you not familiar with the Sunscreen song?
No.
Everybody's free to wear sunscreen. Everyone's going to, I'm crazy. It was literally, they took a guy reading a graduation speech with like a techno beat behind it.
The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah,
like, I remember it now.
And this is the guy who did like the...
like Romeo plus Juliet. And
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
like
yeah.
That. Yeah. He put out an album where he just pulled random spoken, like random speeches that he thought were interesting and built music around them.
Wow.
But that was like a massive hit at one point. It was on a Now compilation. That's how big it was.
Okay. Wow. I didn't remember that one, but there's probably a lot I don't remember.
I was going to say 97.
That was my time if I was too cool for the radio.
I was like, that's the Fat Records days of Chris.
Yeah. I got to see what you guys think about the last verse of this song and if you agree with the advice. So the last verse is, I propose we support a 1 month limit on going steady. I think it would keep people more able to deal with weird situations and get to know more people. I think if you're ready to go out with Johnny, now's the time to tell him about your 1 month limit. He won't mind. He'll appreciate your fresh look on dating. And once you've dated someone else, you can date him again. I'm sure he'll like it. Everyone will appreciate it. You're so novel. What a good idea. You can keep your time to yourself. You don't need date insurance. You can go out with whoever you want to every boy. Every boy in the whole wide world could be yours if you'll just listen to my plan, The Teenage Guide to Popularity. What? That's interesting because I actually think that's pretty good advice for when you're in high school.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I hate saying this because I have at least two friends that are married, like high school romance, but like I don't trust it. I always think that there's a breakup around the corner with that. How do you grow and mature simultaneously from 18 into like your 40s and 50s and 60s?
I don't know. What do you think, Chris? Do you think high school relationships should even count? I don't even think high school relationships should count. Like, I don't think they should even count.
I don't know, man. Like, I was always the type to like fall deep into high school relationships. That was
of
just
course.
Yeah,
my
no,
thing.
Same. And it went terribly every time.
but okay, but what you're telling me is, so the girl's going to sit you down across the table from you and say, okay, so this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to date for a month, and then I'm going to date somebody else. So that's all you're going to get.
But and she might pick you again eventually.
But eventually, she has to date every other boy in this high school before she can come back to you. Like, there's a possibility of that. I don't know if I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Out a prediction, by the way, based on the... I'm going to Google it and see if it's available on Amazon. I want to buy Penny's Guide.
Yeah.
Because I want to see... I have a feeling this is the last sentence. I think this is the last paragraph of the book.
Yeah.
I have a sneaking suspicion that it ends on this. But if it's available on Amazon and not unreasonable, I will purchase this and report back.
Yeah, but as far as this song, I mean, this band, like we said, this band's great. We did talk about this before we recorded, but we talked about how Matthew Cause, the singer of Not a Surf, talked about how like they're screwed with this song at their shows because if they don't play it, there are going to be people that are mad. If they do play it, the hardcore fans are mad because they don't like the song. So, you know, they backed themselves in a corner with that, but they did set themselves up for a long career past this song.
So Penny's Guide to Teenage Charm and Popularity is available on Amazon, a hardcore used copy for $285.
Wow.
So if there's any listeners out there that want to help me do this research, shoot me a message and I'll give you the link and my address.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
Very reasonable $300 purchase for a podcast that has a couple hundred listeners.
Yeah. You know, Not a Surf also did a really awesome cover of someone I consider a one-hit wonder, even though they might not be. They might have another hit that I don't know about, but they did a cover of OMD's If You Leave.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
They did a really good... It's weird, their Spotify playlist, like their two of their top five are covers. Mm. And it's that If You Leave cover and their cover of Where's My Mind by the Pixies.
Oh yeah. The most overdone song.
Oh my God. I mean, I love that song, but I'm also over anybody playing that song.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good on that song.
Inside of Love, I think you mentioned, like, beautiful song. That song was everywhere.
Yeah, I thought it was Always Love, but I mean, that could be... No, that's two different songs.
Maybe it's two different... Yeah, I'm thinking of the, I want to know what it's like on the inside.
That's not the one I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Because that one was the one I... That was when I discovered Nata Surf had other music. Was that popped up in like a How I Met Your Mother episode or something? I was like, oh, who's this? And then I looked, I'm like, Nata Surf.
Yeah.
He's singing though. He's not just speaking to the audience.
You know, I think of Nata Surf and Super Drag as like two of the most like... at the same time, very similar style bands, and they both were better than their hit, I think.
Yeah.
Although I liked the Super Drag hit more than I liked the Nata Surf hit, but they both were able to have a career and be a cool, respected band for a lot longer than their hit. They were able to turn their hit into a career, which is a cool thing to do. I always like to think that I could do that if I had that opportunity, or I like to pretend that I could, you know, and not have that weird situation of you have your hit and then that's the end. I respect them for that. So you're a big fan of this band in general?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge fan of this band. Let's back up, because I didn't necessarily follow them too far past High Low. Mm-hmm. So I was and I still am a huge fan of that album, and I've dabbled in some of their later stuff, but mostly just High Low specifically, yes.
And they're still, they put out something last year.
Yeah.
In January.
Yeah,
they're still going at it, which is awesome. Mm-hmm.
I see they even toured with Super Drag.
They're like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Nata Surf and Super Drag.
Sure. This kind of goes with your theory, Matt, of all these shows that they were featured on. I didn't know you were actually... You actually looked at
I researched it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
One Tree Hill, Gilmore Girls. On Gilmore Girls?
Yeah, they had a song on Gilmore Girls. Really? I think it was... No, that was Wilco. I was going to say, I think it's a cover of 13 by Big Star, but that was the Wilco cover that was on Gilmore Girls. The thing that I want to point out that I think is wild, and obviously only one person on this microphone is in a band that could speak to if this is as wild as I think it is, but their careers started when they recorded a demo and they were at a show at the Knitting Factory and they just happened to see the lead singer of the Cars and just walked up to him and was like, hey, this is our band. Would you like to produce it? And he called him like 3 weeks later and was like, yeah, I dig your sound. Come down to the studio. Right. Let's do something.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where I was just talking about this. I think I was talking to you about this kind of stuff where you can work hard and build a fan base and do everything the DIY way and could eventually have a hit in 20 years or something doing it like, I put it in quotes, but like the right way or whatever. Or you could just meet somebody and talk to the right person and that could just open a door to you. So I guess my point is like, talk to people. That's what's wild is that for Nata Surf, it was talking to Rick Ocasek.
Yeah. That leads into like, hey, this sounds like Weezer. Well, same producer,
right? So I think that's where you hear that similar. You see that similar sound.
Yeah, I mean that intro riff is so similar to Sweater Song. Yeah. Like it's
almost like they just were like, what's the sweater? How does the Sweater Song play? And let's just do the absolute opposite note.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very close. I mean, down to the conversation and going on and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this song, how do we feel about is this? Did it bring the one hit thunder or is this a blunder? I don't know.
I mean, I think Nata Surf as a whole is a thunder. And I think honestly, you're sitting down and recording High Low. Whoever it was that heard this song and was like, this is the single that we're putting out is kind of a ballsy move. Because this, I mean, no, I don't think anyone could have predicted that 96 would be the year of the spoken word at the time that they were recording it. So I'm going thunder all the way with this one.
Hmm. Okay. What do you? I know, Chris. You like the song and the band,
and the video.
Look, guys. I mean, this album was phenomenal to me. Like, this is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Nice.
And I think this song was the gateway into allowing people to find Nata Surf.
Right.
I think this got your attention, like we talked about, right?
So yeah, I guess that's also something to say. Like, I don't know, as good as all of that indie stuff was, would it have ever gone anywhere if people weren't at least vaguely familiar with them because of Popular?
Right.
They could have just been another New York band that like opened for a lot of big bands, but no one ever heard of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's a song that catches your attention for sure. It's because it's different, weird. It's weird.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of times what makes a hit. It's not necessarily like some straightforward, beautiful song. It's more something that jarring. It's something jarring where you're like, what is that? You know? And I think that a lot of times some of, you know, you're saying this is one of your favorite albums ever. And a lot of times things that I do not like at all whatsoever become my favorite. We talked about The Streets. Hated The Streets the first time I heard it. Dude, I hated Jimmy Eat World the first time I heard him. When I heard Clarity, first song, Table for Glasses, I thought it was the slowest, lamest. I was like, oh my God, this sucks. Granted, I was real into punk rock at the time. But then it went on to become one of my favorite albums ever. A lot of times, Counting Crows, first time I heard Counting Crows was on, they played on Saturday Night Live. And I remember watching it with my dad and laughing harder at the Counting Crows than at the skits. Because I was like, this is horrible. Oh my God. Went on to become one of my favorite. When that is my favorite album of all time. August and Everything After is my favorite album of all time. The first time I watched it, I laughed at how terrible it was. So, you know, there's something to being jarring, catching people's attention, being different. Sometimes it seems bad to you. And I think we were talking about this earlier, Matt and I. Sometimes, and it's a little harder now because you have all music ever created at your fingertips at all times. So to be able to sit and, like, if you went to a record store and bought a record and you spent $20 on it, you're going to be like, well, I'm at least going to give this a good chance. I'm going to listen, even if I don't like the first time, I'm going to listen to it again and again because I spent money on it. And then you might end up loving something that's a little more challenging. You know, you have to like spend the time and get into the album as a whole. You know, there are albums that are created as a work of art in themselves. And maybe if you just take a piece of that, if you take a song of that, that's not enough. You know, so I do think there's value in jarring people's ears and make them turn their head and go like, what? Not just some middle of the road average song, you know, like that people are just like, eh, that's fine. That's background music. This will make you turn your head when some guy's yelling at you about rules for being a TJ, teenager.
How often you should wash your hair.
Yeah.
Just like really getting at you about it.
And my main point is that I would go with Thunder.
All right.
Go with Thunder.
It's a very long rounded way to get to Thunder.
Yeah, I mean,
three-way,
you know,
Thunder it is.
Yeah. I mean, and they're a great band. You know, if somebody's listening to this that hasn't checked out Not a Surf, they're like, they're legit. This isn't like, we're not talking about like the Macarena here or something. Yeah. We're not talking about like novelty music, Right Said Fred or something. We're talking about like a legit awesome band. So I think we're all,
yeah,
all
check them out. Their first three albums are all phenomenal. Check them all out.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Time in a Picture off the Punchline album, Action. Visit punchline.com for tour dates, new music, and merch. If you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Chris and I can make your show sound as professional as possible. Let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. Tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.